Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 173. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Ken Phillips. What is up, good sir?
Hey, man. Not too much. Glad to be back again recording. It's, another week in the weirdness that is 2020. Don't know. It's still weird.
It is plenty weird.
Schools are coming back in session. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I don't have that to deal with. But getting that whole job thing again is a pretty weird time currently.
Yeah. I think you've had some good news on that front though. So, you know, not to jinx anything, but
yeah,
it sounded like things were moving in the right direction there. Schools back in session. Lots of controversy about the colleges bringing kids back to campus. Some places still playing college football, apparently. Saw a lot of people were excited about SEC putting their schedule out.
I still just feel like it's going to be a disaster waiting to happen. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like someone's going to get infected and it's going to hit two different teams and then they're not going to know what the hell to do at that point.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I'm not sure how this could end well, necessarily. It seems like we've tried the F it, let's just see what happens approach already at this point, and it doesn't seem like that's worked out exactly very well. So maybe we want to try something, you know, a little different. I don't know. But I don't know who's doing it right exactly. It seems like it's kind of messed up everywhere. Just like having kids back in at school, it just seems like it's going to lead to, naturally, there being big outbreaks there just because of how closely, people are housed together. But
it's pretty crazy. I've seen... And I don't know where your daughter goes, but I mean, some of these newer schools, they do have smaller classrooms and they have more space than the ancient buildings that we went to school in.
My daughter's going to full-time distance education this year, or at least until the middle of September, I think. They're going to like reevaluate things later, but...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, weirdly, they're letting them do sports, though, which is not sure how I feel about that. I mean, it's interesting. I don't know. Compromise, maybe? It's...
I guess they're trying to still get people to be out and about. A lot of sports do occur outdoors, so I think a lot of people are maybe putting some stock in the fact that they... will not be an enclosed space together.
It seems like there's maybe less spread out outdoors, but...
And I do know that, like, even with my sister's sons, they have certain protocols, even at the Little League level, for baseball. Like, there's only one person allowed in a dugout. You've got to, you've even got to space out when you're... Or at least you're supposed to be spacing out, I should say, when you're in the dugout, so to speak, for a baseball game.
Right.
So that there aren't too many people gathered. Like, I guess I would think that there would be some ways to limit that, again, especially since it's in an outdoor setting. Yeah, but I guess it would still be nerve-wracking for that to be the case.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems I can see, because I think it is like probably actually damaging for kids to like be stuck inside like literally all the time. I think sports are kind of a important thing for kids to participate in, but you know, I mean, it's just nobody knows what the right thing to do is, so people are just trying to make the best decisions they can, I guess. And Would have been nice if we could have knocked this out a couple months ago, but here we are. It is what it is, what it is, as they say.
Yes.
And well, moving on this from this horror show to a different horror show. Kevin and I just happened to watch a fairly recent program on HBO, the first episode at least, called Lovecraft Country. And this is a horror, I think it's safe to say.
100%.
TV show.
Yeah.
Dealing with the seemingly the Cthulhu mythos, which was started by the author H.P. Lovecraft. So when I saw this series was coming out, I was kind of excited because I had grown up a big fan of Lovecraft's growing up. I don't know how. I guess it was from coming across the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. I probably saw that in like bookstores or something and was like, well, that's really interesting.
I do remember our dearly departed friend David Agartner being a big Cthulhu guy. Like, it was not something or a concept that I was terribly familiar with at a young age. It at least hit me in high school, I would say, is when I kind of got in the know. And I don't even think I read one book that's kind of like a combination of a bunch of his short stories, I think. And I know I got that either shortly after college. It might have been when you and I were living together, which is a long ass time ago at this point.
True. Started about 20 years ago, maybe.
Yeah. Literally. So, you know, and I did play obviously Call of Cthulhu with you and your brother and some other of our cohorts there in Altoona. So yeah, I was a little bit familiar with them, but I still feel like I lack a deep understanding of H.P. Lovecraft. Like, I have not definitely gone in for a deep dive on him, and I feel like there is a very real possibility that there's going to be stuff that I am not quite catching on this show.
Yeah,
that they're going to present. That I definitely, yeah. I'm just gonna say up front here that I'm along for the ride. Like, I really enjoyed that first episode.
Yeah, I agree. That it seemed like a good show. You know, they must have spent a lot of money. The special effects looked pretty good. I felt like the actors were good. I thought I was going to be a little annoyed by the woman in their group. Letitia, I think, is her name.
Oh, yes.
But she turned out to be pretty cool, I think, so I'm on board with everybody. The salesman, or not the salesman, the guy who's kind of traveling and
yeah,
working on the Green Book, I guess, the kind of the book for letting you know, African American people know where was safe to stop or go to during the time you know, the middle of the last century, I guess.
This
takes place
this
in the 1950s America.
Yeah, they do not give you an exact time frame, but that does say the 50s.
And yeah, I guess I remember doing a book report or some kind of report on H.P. Lovecraft in high school. So I know, okay, I must have been fairly into him at that point. And, you know, he's a very, I don't know, he's kind of a troubling figure in some ways. I guess you could maybe think of him as a troubled genius. I'm not sure if people have thought about it that way, but he definitely seems to have had some mental issues and other kind of sicknesses through his life. and was a pretty big racist. So that was, you know, I guess a troubling thing about him as well. Definitely like anti-immigrant, and a lot of the kind of fears that he, I guess, drew on or capitalized on were kind of like the idea of these strange creatures, you know, less than human creatures kind of coming in like being the threat to everybody, which you could, I mean, you know, if you didn't have his letter, like all these letters where he is basically saying the most racist shit ever, you could maybe read into those stories a little bit to see some of that. But that kind of is the nail in the coffin there. So, yeah, it's not really easy to argue that he's not, wasn't a racist. But so it was kind of interesting that this is basically a black story of involving the Cthulhu mythos. I believe it's based on a book by a black author. From what I was reading, they were, you know, kind of recognizing the troubling parts of Lovecraft while still really enjoying like his work and kind of the his like descriptions and storytelling. So it's kind of like taking the, you know, I think he said something like, it's like, you know, if you have a injured hand or something, you can maybe fix it and save the parts that you can, so you don't have to like cut it off completely. Referring to, you know, H.P. Lovecraft's work in the being the kind of the hand in that place. You don't have to cut off the whole thing necessarily if you can kind of save the parts that work. And I think like shifting this particular story and making it from a black point of view during that time is a good way of kind of dealing with things while also keeping the good parts of the Cthulhu mythos, which to speak of that a little bit, like you talked about maybe missing some things. And the kind of interesting thing about this Cthulhu mythos is that it's like an open source mythos almost, because he encouraged people to write stories using like the characters or concepts that he came up with, or like the world that he was building. So like kind of other writers would just sort of like, you know, borrow things and, you know, mention the Necronomicon in their stories or
I always forget that the concept of the Necronomicon comes from Lovecraft, just because obviously it is central to the Evil Dead series.
Yeah, and also I think there's some kind of Batman connection as well. I think Arkham Asylum is where the villains go in Batman, and there I believe there's also a Miskatonic University in Batman. I could be wrong on that one, but that was kind of the local university where people would, you know, tend to go on their research on their road to madness in these Lovecraft stories. They always seem to end with people going insane. So I remember the role-playing game, one of the key stats was your sanity points that you could eventually run out of.
Yeah, I completely had forgotten about that aspect of the game, because it did remind me a little bit, like, you don't really win the game. Like, your character almost always... the best thing you can do is run away at some juncture with your sanity.
You're just hoping to survive. Yeah, you don't really have a hope of, you know, defeating Cthulhu or anything. you're just trying to survive the encounter, basically, without losing your mind or your life. So it was a little grim in that way. It wasn't like Dungeons and Dragons where you were, you know, thinking you were going to go out and slay a dragon or something.
And that you usually tried not to challenge anything that wasn't too out of your out of your league.
Because sometimes you might get like a magic item or something, but it's usually something that's going to make you lose your mind if you use it too much, according to the mechanics of the game. So Yeah, not exactly Dungeons and Dragons. More Resident Evil, I'd say, in tone. Which, there was a... I did see there was a recent video game called the Call of Cthulhu that came out for the PlayStation 4, but I have not checked that one out myself. Yeah, just to get back, I guess, to the TV show, I appreciated the very opening of this TV show, you know, just letting us know right off the bat that we're going to see some crazy shit at some, you know, during the course of the show. Having the opening kind of, as it turns out, spoiler, I guess, for the first minute of the show, to be a dream sequence, but you get to see some crazy alien shit going on.
Yeah.
Seemingly the Cthulhu popping up on the battlefield.
Yep.
And a mysterious woman coming out of a spaceship who I have a theory about, but I don't know if I want to get into just now, but I'll tell you about it. Remind me later.
Okie dokie. Don't want to give away too much.
Right. I want people to watch the show, I guess, because, it is pretty good. It's basically following this this guy who came back from fighting in World War II, and
I honestly thought that it was going to be a little bit older in the time frame, just because they were showing the trenches, and I'm like, isn't that more of a World War I thing and not a World War II thing?
I would think so. I mean, that's kind of the defining characteristic of the World War I, is the trenches. I mean, maybe it wasn't that way everywhere, but certainly in the Europe and the Western front there. But that is definitely the defining characteristic of the World War I. But it's possible there could have been trenches in World War II. I'm not a historian.
I think they were just used. It was just a little bit confused. It just set me back a World War. That's all.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't really. They did make it clear later that it was the 50s.
Yeah,
and
he would have been much older than he was.
Or at least post World War II, I should say. Like, because I think they might have said that he was in World War II specifically during the show. So it's like, oh, okay. So this has to be a later time frame than I was initially thinking.
I think one of those title cards that they threw up there might have mentioned something about 1950s, but I'm not sure that it was any more specific than that. But I did like the title cards. I think they were I kind of like the look of those. They would throw those up there whenever they were going to a new location to kind of let you know where you're at.
That's always a convention that I go back to. I always think about Indiana Jones, kind of.
Yeah.
With the airplanes usually traveling to and fro. It was a nice little device. I was kind of interested in what font exactly they were using, because I think about these things.
No, I noticed that as well.
I think it's some type of a Broadway type font that's maybe a little stretched vertically.
Yeah, it was attention getting, I'd say.
Yeah.
They were on their way to a mysterious. Well, so his father was missing for 2 weeks, perhaps. They didn't have a great relationship. His father did write him some kind of letter saying that he should meet him in Ardham, Massachusetts, I believe, which at first he thought was Arkham.
Does turn out to be actually Arkham.
I mean, there's something weird going on there. If we could, not necessarily... Well, I mean, it's not like we know anything at this point, but... Yeah, I mean, we might as well just spoil the first episode. I think people can handle that.
Just stop right now, I guess, at this point. This is more of a review show at this.
Yeah, I have a feeling that
go ahead.
coming out a little bit after, you know, people will have a couple, maybe a week or two to catch up on this show if they're going to, before listening to this podcast episode. So
yeah, then I do not feel bad at all.
Yeah, so they end up kind of the first, well, a large portion of the episode doesn't really have a lot of fantastical elements in it, which I think is another reason that I liked the beginning, kind of getting you the weird creature and CGI stuff kind of right off the bat, just to let you know you're getting into, there will be weird stuff happening.
Yeah, they definitely gave you a little taste, and then they just did a great job of building the three main characters. Atticus Freeman, who is the aforementioned soldier that we were talking about. Letty, who is the female lead and his love interest, I would say.
Things are certainly looking like they're going to go that way, yeah.
Yeah, and who doesn't love a little Courtney B. Vance as Uncle George Freeman? He is doing the aforementioned Green Book. And yes. I cannot say that I have seen the other two in anything necessarily, or, you know, they don't jump off the page, but I thought that they were all really great. And I know that the wife watched with me, and she was completely worried that when shit did go crazy there at the end of the episode, that she was really hoping that Uncle George didn't get eaten. And she was very thankful that this did not occur.
I mean, they were tried multiple times to make us think that something bad, horrible happened to Uncle George, you know, right there in the last 10 minutes, I feel like.
Yeah.
He was almost eaten by the weird, I don't know if they're calling them Shoggoth creatures. And then also run over by a car almost, seemingly. But both times I was pretty sure he was going to be okay. It's like, they can't do Uncle George like that.
I was thinking that if there's an early person to get knocked off, it's got to be the uncle.
Right. That did cross my mind.
Unfortunately, like, they talked about him being slow earlier in the episode, and they do present him, you know, as an older gentleman. I would say 50, you know, 50s, maybe early 60s. Like, they're not making him really old, but they're definitely making him a little bit on the older side.
Yeah. He's like coded to be old enough to die, I guess, in the entertainment world. But yeah, he was a little gray hair, but he's still out there getting around. Apparently he had his knees busted up from people who, you know, didn't like him being in their town, apparently. So he does have a little trouble getting around and doesn't seem to be in the best shape to start with. So you know, that he had the deck stacked against him there.
Yeah, which is another reason why I guess I would unfortunately not be surprised if he is taken out at some juncture during this show. Like, it did not happen in the first episode, but I will probably be on the edge of my seat waiting for his death.
Yeah, if I was a betting man, I would definitely put him at the top of my Deadpool list for the characters. You know, still way under that sheriff from tonight's episode, who I kind of had a bad feeling. I felt like he definitely was not going to make it. So, yeah, if I would have bet, he would have been the number one. But
yeah, number one with a bullet, as the kids might say.
Yeah, when he got bit by
in this case, a head-chomping monster.
Yeah, when he got bit by that weird creature, he just did not look right to me after that. And I was like, is nobody noticing how, you know, effed up this guy's looking?
Well, and I was trying to figure out how he was still alive. But considering that he was transforming, I guess, slowly into a new being, I can understand why he was still alive. Like I did wonder that, but then I'm like, oh, okay, well then that solves that problem.
Yeah, his like movement was you, looking when, a little when weird.
You start to turn into one of the creatures that attacked you. So they are very werewolfian.
Or vampiric, as they were kind of alluding to, with their seeming distaste for bright lights. although I'm not 100% convinced of that either. It seems like there's some sort of force that is there interested in protecting them, especially Atticus, it seems like. You know, based on that silver car that's kind of followed them and saved them from the townsfolk of that one Smithville or whatever that was that they stopped at.
Oh, yeah.
And then also, I'm thinking that could be the same individual who called off the creatures there in the cabin. So it seemed like they were kind of, in a way, protected, I think. But so I don't know. That's the verdict is still out for me. But you know, like you said, I'm definitely down to see where this show goes.
Yeah, it's been pretty fun. This is the first time in quite some time that I've had HBO, and I just got done watching Perry Mason, which I enjoyed quite a bit.
Yeah,
yes.
We were watching that one also. I think we still have a couple episodes to go, but yeah, that was pretty good. That was better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I'm all caught up. I was never really all that terribly familiar with Perry Mason, even though Perry Mason Returns really would have been right in our wheelhouse, at least time-wise. I believe it came back in 85. So,
it was a weird choice to redo that series, just because, like you said, I don't think anybody is like anyone who's living. And it's not like the people who were fans of Perry Mason, the original series, are necessarily going to be crazy about this show, because it's like so much more like hard-boiled and like hardcore than that Perry Mason show was in the 50s, which I did watch, but, you know, I don't know if I was the hugest fan. I mean, it was a big show because it was like, I think, the first courtroom procedural ever made, so it was very influential, but...
Yeah, well, that was the other reason why I was thinking that even when Perry Mason returned, I'm like, I don't know if I would have really been into courtroom drama at the age of 11 or something like that. Like 9 to whatever. It did last a few years. I'm trying to think, like, I guess Law and Order is the first time I remember really going for that type of a show.
Yeah, I don't know. I know, well, I don't think Night Court counts.
If Night Court counts, I did watch a procedural then.
I don't remember them actually focusing on court cases too much on that show. I think that was mostly like, you know, they could have been anywhere for the most part, in terms of like the accuracy of which they were, you know, carrying out their jobs, I think, into like the attention they paid to it, really. It was more of an excuse to spout off one-liners for the most part.
That did seem to be the focus of the court.
That is one I'd like to go back and see, because I haven't watched that show in a long time, but I remember it being very goofy and funny. I was a big fan of John Larroquette, I believe.
Yeah, he was the one attorney. I believe he was the prosecutor most of the time.
Yeah. Or was he the defense guy? I don't even know. Marky Post was in that too, I think. Wasn't she the...
Yeah, I think she was the defense.
Okay.
I don't completely remember, but that is what my brain is telling me at the current moment. And you're going to look it up. Like a weasel.
That's right. I'm going to do you like that. And
you're do me like
Kevin,
that.
You are correct, sir. John Larroquette was the prosecutor in that show. I don't know why I thought he was the defense attorney. Huh. Interesting. Usually, his personality was almost more like a defense attorney. Well, you would think he's more like kind of blustering and, you know, full of himself.
Oh. Yeah. But
I guess prosecutors can be like that, too. I mean, that shouldn't be so stereotypical.
Yeah, that is a show that I know that I've watched some weird 80s shows during this time period. Just because I've watched a lot of Knight Rider and some Magnum P.I. We watched some Chips, which would have been a little bit earlier. But Night Court is not one of those ones that, for whatever reason, like, I don't feel... I think it might be on Nick at Night or something like that now.
Hmm.
Yeah, but I haven't really given it a chance to watch, because that's one of those ones that it kind of reminds me of my experience with Johnny Dangerously, the movie. I had remembered loving that as a child, and then I went back and watched it in college, and I'm like, oh my god, I didn't get half these jokes when I was watching this as a child.
You just
You know, I kind of feel that you'd be in that same situation with Night Court. You know, like, I might have watched it and I'm sure that I laughed at it, but I wonder how much of it was going over my head at the time.
Yeah, I'd be curious to check this one out. This could be another one to revisit, another, pandemic rewatch. Reading this. I forgot that Richard Mall was a character in this as well. He was the bailiff. Oh,
yes.
Big bald guy. But you might be interested to know, Kevin, that he had actually been filming a sci-fi movie and shaved his head for that role. But the producers loved the look so much that they had him shave his head for the entire series, the whole time. So, like, that wasn't normally, his normal look, I guess. Or even what they were intending when they cast him, apparently. Just one of those happy little accidents.
Yeah, there seem to be plenty of those in Hollywood where, you know, something was supposed to go one way and went another, and it became... I can't say that became iconic, but it definitely became something. Because I feel like I ended up seeing him in previous roles after Night Court with hair and thinking how strange it was.
Oh. I don't even know if I would recognize him with hair.
He kind of looks like Shemp almost.
Shemp. Yeah. I was watching a YouTube video about Shemp.
From the Three Stooges, like, I felt like he had that type of a haircut when, at least in his younger days.
Did you know that Shemp was actually Mo and Curly's brother in real life? Like, I had no idea.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and, I did learn that somewhat recently.
And Curly got sick and wasn't able to continue the act, but they still needed somebody else to keep it going. So he kind of stepped in and ended up, it sounded like, paying his brother some of the money he made as well. So I remember thinking he was like a weird substitute for Curly, but and this video was also kind of talking up his own style of comedy, which I think was different than Curly's, but he was still funny upon further review. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
for the Three Stooges.
Yeah, the Three Stooges is one that I maybe have caught a couple of episodes or so during the quarantine, but not a whole lot of them.
Yeah. I kind of want to go back to some Laurel and Hardy. I don't know if anybody remembers that, but I used to watch those guys.
I still remember them more from Scooby-Doo than I do from actual Laurel and Hardy bits.
Why would they have those guys on Scooby-Doo? I mean,
it's all the time. So weird.
And they did the Three Stooges, too.
The Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah. It's like, but, weirdly having real people show up in your cartoon. I don't know. It was the '70s, man. Times were crazy.
Yeah, shit was pretty weird back then. And I thank them for a weird childhood.
Well, you know, you might say people were weird back in the Stone Age, Kevin, when they dragged these huge stones across miles to build a big pile of stones. I mean,
an even larger pile of stones. Yes.
Of course, we're referring to a favorite topic of ours on this show. If you're longtime fans, will know we'd love to cover all kinds of Stonehenge-related news. And I feel this almost ties in a little bit with our earlier topic of strange eldritch rituals and presences being someone from another world. At least that's the sort of thing that I assume happened at Stonehenge.
They were not necessarily trying to call Cthulhu, but they were probably trying to call something.
I mean, they gotta be, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You do not drag giant tons of rocks that are way tons and transport them any distance if there isn't some maybe not occult purpose, but at least some religious purpose, let's say.
Yes. So this article that we're discussing, the the headline is that a mystery has been solved. They know where these big stones came from.
Yeah, and they're called the Sarsen stones, which are the ones that are vertical, because the ones that are vertical came from a different location than the ones that lay horizontally.
Yeah, the little ones on top are called blue stones. They don't really look blue to me, but they are known to come from a different location than the Sarsen stones that weigh up to 30 tons and are nearly 23 feet tall. So, they had to come from the Marlborough Downs, which is a group of hills north of the monument. But
They said about 15 miles, and I'm like, oh, that isn't that bad. But then I'm like, man, that is still a long ass way to be hauling stones that large.
Yeah, and this is the part that confused me. They said that they were able to figure this out based on a core sample that was missing?
Evidently someone who worked, a gentleman for his 90th birthday released this core and sent it out. And they used that core to test, to figure out, you know, the chemical combination of the rock so that they could find the most likely location of where they quarried this rock.
All right.
Because listen, they knew that Cousin Rock would be nearby. Not the rock with the eyebrow, but a rock, like the physical rock.
If you smell what we're cooking, yes.
Yes.
Well, Kevin, I did a little more research just as you were talking there, and I think I figured out a little bit of this mystery. Apparently, the guy who had the core from Stonehenge, the Sarsen Stone, he was part of the workers, one of the workers who was charged with renovating the Stonehenge back in 1958. So he carried out repairs there. They had to drill this core out to install metal rods to keep the stone standing. And apparently he just, after drilling out the core, just kept it and put it on his wall in his office. And he brought it with him when he went to New York. He moved to New York, apparently, but then he expressed his wish that it be returned to the monument on the eve of his 90th birthday. So I'm not exactly sure what, you know, I guess that made sense to him for some reason. not necessarily everybody else, but he had somehow a piece of Stonehenge. I guess they weren't that strict on this kind of stuff back in the 50s. It seems like this sort of thing that they would be. I mean, it's like a World Heritage Monument, you know, irreplaceable.
Yeah, I kind of understand how you need to take a part out to, if you're putting rebar in to help it stay up. A, I guess that seems kind of questionable to start with, but
you can drill a hole to make it stronger. Yeah.
Yeah, so, but if this is set to do that, like, yeah, how did you sneak off? Because it still had to have been a somewhat significant size. Like, even if you're going through, like, the non-thick width of the stone, like, that's still got to be, like, probably a foot plus long?
It said it was 108 centimeters, which,
Oh, okay.
If I'm doing my math correctly, 42 inches. So, yeah, that's over 3 feet.
Okay,
like,
that's
like 3.5 feet there.
Yeah, 3.5 feet.
Like, so that's a big-ass piece of stone. And
yeah, that's a hell of a thing to move with you when you move to the United States.
You can't really just put that in your pocket, I don't think.
No.
I wonder how the hell he got out of that, how he got away with that. They did say that two other holes were drilled during that same work, the renovation, but the location of those cores remains unknown. So apparently they're still somewhere out there.
Still at large. And I would guess that if they got more cores, they'd be able to figure out more closely the region that they were quarried from. But they seem pretty sure of this being the general vicinity that they found the stones in.
Yeah, I think it was good to be able to see the core, because they hadn't been washed away by all the rain and interacted with the elements for all those years. So they're able to kind of get a better picture of the makeup of the rock to tell where it had come from. So I'm glad we figured out what happened to that core there. That is a pretty weird situation, and I also hope that they are doing a little bit better job of making sure that people aren't just drilling out pieces of Stonehenge and taking it with them. Because there's are big stones, but they're not going to last forever if people are keep drilling them out, Kevin.
They indeed will not last forever. If at some point they will kind of wash away. Like, even the, like, heads at Easter Island, I would think, like, just from a wind-worn situation, like, it's outdoors. Eventually it'll...
And am I crazy to say that...
It'll dust away.
Like, these stones had to be kind of replaced and put back up. At least some of them did. Kind of from when they were... You know, from antiquity or whatever.
Yeah, I do believe you're correct that some of it has been recreated.
Yeah, so it hasn't lasted forever so far. So I guess it'd be crazy to think that it's going to continue to last forever when it never lasted forever to start in the first place, Kevin. That's just
crazy. Yeah,
and you know what else? It's one of those things that seems like it's been around forever, but maybe it won't be. Is the jeans. Jeans were once ubiquitous. You'd put on a pair of jeans to go anywhere. Nowadays, I don't know. I don't know about you, but when I haven't worn a pair of jeans in months.
Well, I am going to be fair to jeans. And say that I do not wear jeans this time of the year anyway.
Fair.
I wear shorts from April probably through parts of November, I would say, on a regular basis. It kind of depends upon how warm our Novembers are, but I definitely say I get a couple of weeks into November just using shorts. So I would not typically be wearing them currently. Yes. But I could see I am going to use my jeans less. That is 100% for sure.
See, usually I would wear jeans going into the office occasionally. That was like the, you know, dress down option, hilariously. Yes. Seeming now. So like from working at home for these last several months, I'm lucky if I even have my pajama pants on, to be honest with you, Kevin. There's days when I'm just wearing shorts or, you know, boxers even, if I'm really having a, you know, a struggle there to get dressed.
Since I do not even have that type of a job to deal with, I guess I don't think about it very much. I am in shorts and a t-shirt nearly all the time now. And occasionally when we go out somewhere proper, I put on a real pair of shorts that has pockets.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that this is, I mean, I guess, you know, like we said, there's a lot of pandemic kind of things that are happening that aren't new, but it's just kind of accelerating trends that have been going on for a while. I feel like people wearing like yoga pants or the equivalent has become much more acceptable within the last, I don't know, 7 to 10 years, something like that.
Oh,
So that's kind of been a long-term trend, I guess. I'm not sure. I mean, are we at the point where people are going to start wearing that stuff to the office? I don't know. Maybe eventually. But I feel like that's kind of the way things are headed.
Some people do that. They usually tend to dress it up in some manner. Whether it's with a skirt or, you know, a dress of some nature so that it's not just yoga pant.
Right.
You know, they at least try to hide that fact a little bit.
Yeah, but according to this
article, there are some nicer versions of yoga pants at this point, too.
Yes, or in general, leggings, I guess. There's a lot of options out there. And I believe this article mentions yoga pants for men, although that is a fairly new category as far as I can tell, just in my experience. I haven't seen as much of those.
You haven't ordered your pair of yoga pants for at-home use, Ken?
No, I do have some, you know, sweat-type pants, I guess, but... yeah, not exactly yoga pants now. I think Jackie did try to get me a pair, but they were not working for me. So she ends up wearing those. And they were women's yoga pants anyway, so I'm not sure why she was getting me women's yoga pants. But some things we just won't know the answer to, I suppose.
Yeah, luckily the wife has not tried anything that silly on me. So I will take that as somewhat of a victory.
You should.
I could definitely, again, like, I guess I'm not surprised. If you're going to wear jeans less, you are going to wear them down less. Like, and jean is very durable. It is something that I still don't completely get the concept of the worn-in hole. I'm like, listen here, you whippersnappers. I used to earn my holes in my jeans. If you're going to do that, just wear them for a long time. That's my advice from me to you. Really earn them.
Kids earn this.
Like although it's probably just way easier to buy them with holes in them already.
I would think so. Yeah, the kids have got one up on us in that category. They don't have to like work to make their jeans look cool. But, you know, jeans, as far as I know, started out as something like miners would wear back in like the 1800s. It was like a working person's clothing. Oh. Because like you said, they were very durable, just based on like the whatever warp and weft, however it is that you make denim. It's a very durable material that you can work in and it would last for a long time. But for some reason, people thought they were cool looking at some point. I don't know if that was like the 50s. Is that when jeans?
It didn't really say in the article when, or at least I didn't feel like it said in the article when jeans became cool.
That's kind of what I think anyway. I'm going to blame the 50s.
I remember them being cool when we were kids. So there was always something that was supposed to be, and I at least think for me somewhat was, appealing for Levi's jeans. You know, like there was something about that brand that just made it seem authentically Western, although I should probably use authentically in quotations. I guess jeans have been demystified a little bit. I mean, I guess they still are like the easy thing for me to wear out. Like, if it's still, I guess, November through March or something, I still think that I'm probably going to throw on jeans more frequently than other pants when I go out. Like, I'm not going to throw on khakis at that time. And I feel strange, honestly. Like you said, like, there isn't like a men's yoga pants. It's maybe new. But I'm not sure I'm ready to wear that out there.
I personally would probably wear like a kind of a, you know, workout / jogging pants kind of situation.
I need to do a better job of having a pair of those that works in those temperatures.
Yeah,
I need a little more fashion forward pair, that's for sure, if I'm gonna be seen in public with them.
Yeah, I think that's something that's out there. But
there have definitely been the popularization of track suits is an attractive look.
That's been a big trend. So I guess I could see that coming more. And my prediction, sometime in the next 10 years, people are going to be wearing that stuff to the office. If people are still going to the office in 10 years. I'm calling it now. So you can call me back on this, in 2030. Yeah.
Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 776.
I thought you were going to say like number 200 or something, but hopefully we'll be doing better than that.
if it's in the 2030s, I'm going to give us a little bit of credit of at least doing 26 a year.
Yeah, that's fair. Oh, goodness. Well, we've come to the time where we like to talk about what we're drinking. And I went back to one that I haven't had in a little while, but from a favorite brewery from back in the day, Bell's. This is an Oberon Ale. Seemed like a nice summery thing to enjoy while summer is still with us.
The temperatures are still pretty toasty out there. I am up for the my sister-in-law drove here on a couple of occasions from Colorado to avoid taking the aeroplane and being in small confined spaces with people. And she brought me some beer the second time she came back, which was very nice of her. This one happens to be from Wiley Roots Brewing Company. It's Raspberry Lemonade Slush. It's a sour ale with raspberry and lemon. And it's delicious. It really goes down super easy. It's raspberry and lemon. Like, there's nothing to it, and it has that nice sour, pungy flavor to it. 4.6% ABV. So obviously this is not a knock you out juice. It's nice and light. So if you happen to be in the Colorado vicinity, I suggest checking them out. Because I'm trying to figure out where... Greeley, Colorado is where they're from. Cool. Exactly. So, yeah.
It sounds like it'd be almost too fruity, but they do a good job of balancing that there.
The lemon cuts out some of that sourness from the raspberry quite well.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'm into the sours. And again, just because it's warm out, these kind of lighter beers have felt really good for me recently. I kind of keep on talking about that, and I will pound that into the ground until we don't have warm weather. Because I have been enjoying these lighter, lower than 5% beers here this summer. Or maybe just 6 to 4%. And in to me, in the lower register.
Yeah.
Those are the Belt Time beers of the show. This is Kevin DeFrango at DeFrango11. That is Ken Phillips at Gozer33. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify, wherever you happen to find us. Please do a little rate and review and help us out. And we will see you next week.
See ya.